I really have trouble focusing on things like budget and Mars sample return. Oh, gee. I appreciate the interest that the rest of you have.
Billions of dollars.
Billions.
And good evening, everyone. This is Larry Heron, and this is also episode 1606 of Talking Space. Today is Sunday, April 21st, 2024. And as usual, we have a lot to talk about. But first, hello, Mark Ratterman.
Hey, Larry, and hello, new voice.
Hi, nice to meet you.
We are welcoming a new member of the Talking Space team this time around, and it's Heather Smith. Hi, Heather.
Hi, good to hear you both.
Yeah. So Heather, you're known as, I think it's at Heathernaut on X, is that right?
Yes, I am the Heathernaut on X, formerly known as Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram.
Okay. Heather's been familiar with Talking Space for a long time, right?
Long time, since the beginning, 2009? Yeah, so I've been following space news, space activities, when I joined Twitter, and yes, I'm still calling it Twitter, back in 2009. And somehow or another, I was chosen for the what was then called the NASA Tweet Up. It's currently called the NASA Social. It's where just space people get a chance to meet each other and learn about the upcoming missions. Well, I also happened to follow Talking Space. And at that time, I was able to travel down here in Florida. I'm actually in Northeast Florida, but going to Kennedy Space Center and saw the Talking Space crew back in 2011. So yeah, it's just a long time coming.
Very good. And so tell us a little bit about your interest in space. How did that start for you?
Sure. So my original interest in space happened during a sixth grade field trip when a new segment of a science museum opened up in New Orleans, Louisiana, where I grew up. And the tour guide happened to walk us through the little mock-up of the space station, and I look to my right, and there's a toilet there. And I'm like, what in the world? Why is there a toilet there? And of course, the tour guide went on ahead and explained, you know, you have to make sure everything flushes, otherwise it floats around. And that, to me, was hilarious. So actually, that is my thoughts about how cool space really is. From then on, literally a week later, my mom brought me to Stennis Space Center. They have their own visitor center. It was then called Stennisphere. Now it's renamed for something. I forgot. It's renamed the Infinity Center, thanks to the great Fred Hayes. And I was officially hooked at that time. So that's how my start in liking spaceflight, understanding spaceflight, really thinking it was cool. Then I moved here to Florida, saw my first space shuttle launch, and it happened to be SCS-107. And that completely changed my view of human spaceflight and of NASA in general. That's kind of my start. And now here I am years later. I have a bachelor's and master's in communication. I'm planning to be a public affairs officer somewhere at some point, at least one day, hopefully. And I'm just again, here in Jacksonville, Florida, and enjoying watching the launches from my apartment, just stepping outside and then, hey, there's a launch today. So that's my life right now.
That's nice to be able to do, isn't it?
Yeah, it's awesome.
So I understand that you have a closer connection with Talking Space than maybe we even realized before. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So walking around Kennedy Space Center, the media area, I happen to see the huge Talking Space banner. And I happen to snap the very photo that happens to be the head photo or the header photo on X right now. So it was my first time seeing the group together and my first time seeing what needs to happen in order to have a podcast, which I didn't know what a podcast really was, because what y'all were doing at the time was different from what's happening now where everyone has a podcast. Y'all were one of the first to actually have a real space podcast. So that to me is revolutionary. So it's an honor to be here. And thank you for inviting me.
You're very welcome. Mark, what do you remember about that meeting? That was back, what, 2011, somewhere around there?
Yep.
Yeah. Well, I remember the mechanics of even being able to do a show, because mm-hmm. I was the only member of the team that was in Florida. And so I went down several days ahead. And, you know, whenever we see a challenge with a media event at Kennedy, mm-hmm. I think back to what they managed to pull together for STS-135. And it was a lot of changes. Our tent location changed at least twice. So that was the third spot that they pointed to and said, here, this is your spot. Wow. And of course, it was in July and it was miserable hot. Oh, and a lot of coordination. This was back in the old days where the best solution I could come up with was a DSL line mm-hmm. that was less than 1 meg of bandwidth. Oof. It was, you know, like less than 300K up and down. Wow. But it was enough to do a Skype connection. Yeah. And it worked. And we had over 250,000 listeners between streaming that carried us and some terrestrial radio stations that carried us. Yeah. So it was a big deal. It was a lot of fun. I remember the tent was right behind us for the NASA social.
Yep.
And there was, I don't remember, Heather, it was over 100 people there, I'm sure, right?
Oh, yes. There were 150 people.
Wow.
Not just Americans. It's one of the last times they actually invited non-Americans to a NASA social. Yeah, it was a little bit of everybody back then. But also I want to point out, you managed to do all of that. Do you remember the really bad rain that we had the day before launch?
I remember being worried about leaving anything on site that night.
Yeah.
And making the mistake of packing everything up. And then the next morning, not anticipating what the traffic was going to be like and being mm-hmm. concerned that we were even going to be there and be able to set up.
Wow.
Yeah, it was, I don't remember the rain and I was probably there for it, but I just remember the effects of it afterwards. And it was, it's a challenge. And, you know, my hat goes off to anybody that pulls that off and attempts it. Of course, now it would be different. We'd have different technologies supporting us. Maybe better, maybe worse. I don't know.
Does that mean you're going to give it a try again for something major that's upcoming, like an Artemis 2 or the next Falcon Heavy or something like that?
It would be tempting, but there's other people that do a good job at that. And, you know, the one thing that would have me hesitate is I'm 10 years older plus than I was then. mm-hmm. And the thought of being a pack mule, you know, for what we did,
Yeah.
That would be a little tough. And I don't know. Of course, I didn't get accreditation for Artemis 1, so I don't know what that was all about. I got to think that KSC wasn't ready to handle the media that
they
wanted to be
slammed,
there.
Huh?
I got to think, and I wasn't there, so I don't know. But holy cow, I saw 135.
Well, I can confirm for Artemis 1, it was crazy. I was there for the NASA social for that. So it was nuts, and you were exactly right.
Very cool. I'm impressed that you were there.
I've been to 7 NASA socials now. So
very good.
It's been an adventure since STS 135, because even the communications team has changed since then, of course. But it's different. But I hope we do get together at least once.
Are you going to the NASA social for the CFT?
I am not. I was not chosen for that one, but it's okay, because that just means there are some other people that get a chance to go, and that's fine with me.
Right. Well, Heather, we are very glad you're with us. And with all that said, time to get going on the news roundup. I said I should also mention that Gene Mikulka and Dr. Kat Raubison and Sawyer Rosenstein are out this time, but they will be back. So first up, Mark, you've got a story for us about United Launch Alliance, and they're flying their final Delta IV Heavy.
Yeah, what can you say when you talk final other than thinking about how many went before? And the Delta IV Heavies and the Delta class of rockets served the United States civilian and defense interests for a long time. The success rate that they had is inspiring and a mark to live up to.
That's for sure.
I've seen a couple of the Delta IV Heavy launches. One I don't remember. I've referred to this previously. I was sick as a dog, and I literally don't remember it.
Wow.
The other one I do remember, it was last June. And it's really, really impressive. I cannot imagine, and I've heard press that I've talked to recently, and Larry, you and I too, that were at Texas for the whatever that big rocket is, that other place.
You must mean the SpaceX Starship.
Oh, the Starship. Is that the same as a BFR?
Oh my god!
I don't know if we want to go there,
but you know it. You know, I well, going back a second, I was lucky to see the first shuttle launch and the last shuttle launch. There were a whole lot of them in between that I missed. There's so many rockets, especially the SpaceX. And the rate that they're launching payloads today, that I doubt there's anybody that's going to say, yep, I've seen every launch. I can't see that happening nowadays. But the Delta IV Heavy, you hate to see it go, but one of the things that we got to keep perspective on is progress means change. And if you're going to have new rockets carrying new payloads to maybe the same or maybe different destinations, you got to expect that we're going to see improvements. And in that respect, hate to see the Delta IV Heavy come to an end, but what a way to go out.
Yeah. Yep, for sure.
And, absolutely.
Say hello to the Vulcan booster.
Right?
Hey, I want to see a Vulcan launch. I want to see this Starliner go on an Atlas V.
Yeah.
Which, let's see, Atlas V N22, which we'll get to that later. Mm-hmm. And lots of other stuff I want to see.
Me too.
Yeah, same.
All right. Up next, Switzerland signs the Artemis Accords, along with Slovenia. Slovenia signed the Artemis Accords outlining best practices for sustainable space exploration on April 19th, and they were the third European country to do so in 5 days. The State Secretary of the Ministry for the Economy, Tourism, and Sports, whose name I am surely going to butcher, but I'm going to give it a try, Mattis Frangis. I'm sorry, sir. he said that Slovenia joins the principles, values, and rules on the peaceful use of space as a common good of humanity. So Slovenia is the 39th nation to sign the accords. It's a member of the European Union and has been an associate member of the European Space Agency since 2016. Slovenia is the third European country to sign the accords. In less than a week, Switzerland signed in a ceremony at NASA headquarters on April 15th. And on the 16th, Sweden signed the accords at an event in Stockholm. And three other countries as well have also signed the accords so far this year, Belgium, Greece, and Uruguay. So the more the merrier. And that's what reminds me of the discussion that we have had from time to time about, hoping that these accords hold up when things get rougher, when it comes time for the rubber to meet the road about keeping your promises. So we shall see.
Gee, Larry, Heather, too, you don't think that a country would ever change their priorities and go back on a signature, do you?
You mean like the United States has from time to time, among other countries? All right, that's all we'll talk about that. That's all we'll say.
So, sorry to bring you down.
Yeah, well, somebody's got to do it.
And we have a lot of work to do on that, too.
Yeah. So up next, a Mars sample return mission update. Heather, what have you got for us?
Oh my goodness. Let's just talk about the fact that for the first hour and 45 minutes, everything from the entire meeting, Bill Nelson at least spoke about a good 30 minutes of it. So I'll just put it to you this way. The sample return mission is expensive. We're talking $11 billion, and it's going to take too long. So they were hoping to get the samples back before 2040. And as of what it looks like right now, it's not going to happen. So they finally decided we're going to make sure that we have a collaborative effort from everyone inside and outside of NASA to help us get these samples returned back to Earth.
All this new stuff we're talking about here is basically NASA reacting to the Independent Review Board report. Is that right?
Right, exactly. Which was way back in like September of last year. So here we are in April, and they finally are deciding, oh, well, it really is too expensive. And now we also figured out that in order for the mission to be quote unquote saved, it also could have impacted other missions such as Dragonfly and Neo Surveyor and other future planetary missions that involve Venus. So I'm glad they decided to go ahead and open up these ideas for other people to be involved to help get the samples to return back here to Earth. But they could have done this. They could have had this announcement sooner.
Yeah. Well, let me see if I have if I'm remembering my numbers right. And I'm not sure if I'm going to hurt you or help you here and you're getting the story told. But I seem to remember that at one point, they were talking about the mission maybe costing $11 billion. Mm-hmm. And so now what kind of numbers are they trying to pare that back to?
So now they're hoping to get it between 8 to $11
billion. Okay.
It used to be
$11 billion was the low side, I guess.
Huh? Right. Right. So let me back up a little bit. they have an entire decadal survey. They've had meetings about it that are over the past year. The original plans was as low as $5 billion. And somehow or another, between the IRB investigation and the IG, they figured out that it's now $11 billion just to get those samples, the 30 plus samples to be retrieved. Right. So, yeah, it's a lot of money.
And correct me if I'm wrong here, mm-hmm. too, but wasn't there some sort of issue also about the fact that, you know, making the whole overall mission take longer to be accomplished mm-hmm. put at risk the entire mission because of mm-hmm. a possible end of mission for these rovers that have been collecting the samples, and then somehow the rovers not being able to get the samples to where they needed to be?
Right. That, of course, is one of the main issues of, oh, we really don't know how to do this. The other issue was that Nikki Fox, who is head of JPL right now, said the other issue is also trying to build a launch capability to get it off of Mars and to travel back here to Earth.
Right.
I would think, well, this is me, just from an outsider, I thought that was already in the plans. Apparently, it wasn't. So there's a bunch of issues that they're having to deal with, that they're asking for collaborative efforts from outside of NASA to help, because they want the samples back. Right. Yeah, commercial okay. industry. Yeah. They want the help, and I'm glad they said something, but let's hope they can do it before 2040.
Wow. That's a long way away.
That's a long way away. Very long way away. But that's the gist of it. They're now just seeking outside influence in order to get the samples back. And between Nikki Fox and Lori Glaze and our current NASA administrator, let's hope they can get it done.
We do too. And hopefully way before 2040. That would be,
yes,
that would be optimal.
Right.
Absolutely. Use that word again.
Absolutely.
So up next, Mark, the crewed flight test of the Boeing Starliner is coming up fairly quickly, and they just had a rollout, and you were there.
Yeah, just a few days ago, in fact. Let's see. You get your nights and your mornings and your days kind of confused, but it was the early a.m. of April 16th at, 4 or 5 a.m. was when it actually rolled, and it was exciting. I was out there with a couple of busloads of press waiting to see Starliner make its first appearance on its way out to the pad. And it didn't disappoint, unless, of course, you were somebody like me who wants things to happen a little quicker. You know, you obviously can't mash the gas on a transporter that's carrying a high-value payload like that. But it was interesting to see. It was exciting to see this spacecraft for the first time. And actually, something I didn't realize, you're going to hear a couple of clips that I had with some short questions from public affairs that I was able to talk to them about. This isn't the first time this capsule has flown. So I'll let you listen to the clips. There was a representative from Boeing and a Kennedy Space Center public affairs representative. And I say, let's go ahead and listen to those clips and hear what they have to say about Boeing's effort and a few questions that I ask KSC.
Very good. Let's listen.
My name is Rosa Bañuelos. I'm a Boeing communicator for the Starliner program, and we're all here gathered for Starliner CFT rollout. This is a big moment for both NASA and Boeing as we get ready to transport Sunny and Butch to the ISS here in a few days. All the employees are here. There's a lot of excitement, but also a lot of sentiment of being proud that we've gotten to this point. So it is a big day for the program.
few years ago, probably more than that, so I lose track of time, I saw a Starliner under construction. Doesn't seem like there have been too many opportunities for the press to get up close and to see the ship. Do you think that'll be possible in the future?
Yeah, we try to provide as many opportunities as we're able to. Obviously, there's a lot of safety concerns on you know, how close we can get to the vehicle, especially when it's being processed. But as we're all here, invited to come watch the rollout, and as we get closer to the mission, we'll also have other opportunities for you to come check it out.
Looking forward to that. And how soon do you think we'll be seeing the next ship?
So this is our CFT spacecraft, and our Starliner 1 mission will be in 2025, as early as February of 2025. So as soon as Starliner lands, we'll bring the spacecraft back here to KSC, and we'll refurbish it and ready for the next mission. So that is the current timeline we're tracking.
Excellent. I am Steven Seisloff. I am NASA's Commercial Crew Program and ISS Program Lead PAO here at Kennedy. And we're here at Kennedy Space Center waiting for Boeing to roll their Starliner spacecraft out ahead of the crew flight test.
Looking forward to events coming along after tonight, especially getting to see Starliner for the first time. One I did see was some years back under construction, and that all takes place here, right?
They put together Starliner, Boeing does, right here at the factory here in Florida. And, you know, this is the spacecraft that has flown before. It flew the very first orbital flight test mission. It's named Calypso. And so when you see it, it's gonna be completely all together and ready for space. It's all fueled. Service module and command module both have their hypergolic maneuvering fuels loaded aboard. And basically, NASA and Boeing teams are getting it ready to go down to the launch pad and set up for that May 6 launch. This is going to be the first time that Starliner carries astronauts to the International Space Station. And believe me, it is a special event that brings out a lot of interest, brings out a lot of people. We are excited as can be to see it.
What kind of tidbits can you share from the Atlas side of the house? This is new to carry crew on Atlas V.
Atlas V has never carried astronauts before. Of course, the Atlas line goes back to the earliest days of the space program, carrying the Mercury astronauts. And that Atlas far different than the Atlas V that we have today. So Atlas V has a wonderful record, perfect record of launching, and really very very reliable vehicle, very effective vehicle designed, you know, that Starliner was designed to fly atop. There's been two orbital flight tests by Starliner. Both of those launched on Atlas V's, and really spectacular rocket for this.
I agree. I've seen several in it. Looking forward to this one.
So, Mark, that was a very interesting comment that Steve Seisloff made there right at the end, where he was talking about how the Starliner was already loaded with fuel, and this is a couple of weeks before launch. It's certainly a different world than with SpaceX, with their fuels, which are, you know, have to be loaded virtually seconds and minutes and hours before launch.
Yeah, they performed the fuel loading in the C-3PF facility before they rolled it out. They're doing spacecraft integration with the Atlas V. They're looking at all of the communications between the stages and, of course, their launch control center, and getting ready for that May 6 launch. And to me, it's exciting. And I remember talking to another NASA program manager, engineer, I forget exactly who he was, but it had to do with a Tedris? Yeah, it was a Tedris launch.
Okay.
And the guy was telling me that each rocket is, with a different payload, is different. There's so many unique things that have to be done to configure a payload for a rocket, and that they actually sequence them far in advance, and if they needed to make changes that they could, but it's something that had to be carefully planned. And again, I'm so impressed with the fact that Northrop Grumman, of course, did this with cargo launches. There were problems with a launch at Wallops Flight Facility, and they switched one or two cargo launches, I forget exactly now, but over to an Atlas. And Atlas is a great rocket. The one that we're going to see for crew flight is a Atlas V N22 and means no payload fairing. The capsule itself is the top of the rocket. Don't need a payload fairing when it's the payload that's going to space. 2-2 is two solids that'll be mounted to the side of the first stage, and then two second stage engines. I'm just looking forward to it.
it's something to quite look forward to. I know that.
And it's going to be a night launch, and and the solids make it. Let's see, how far am I? I'm 162 miles from Cape Kennedy, where I live.
Mm-hmm.
And if you got good visibility, you can see a rocket, but it really helps when there's solids that are part of it, because I saw a SpaceX, whatever their rocket's called. I forget.
Falcon Heavy?
Falcon 9.
Rocket booster, so I was thinking Falcon Heavy.
I'm not trying to diss SpaceX. I'm just honestly scatterbrained at the moment. But I saw a Falcon 9 launch from the house and honestly didn't see it for the first close to 2 minutes. And it was because of trees across the street. I'm in a dark area, but I could not find it. And when I finally did, it was just a small, fast-moving point of light. And the solids really make a difference. I'd seen a shuttle launch from the house, and you know, it really stands out. So this is a night launch. It'll be on Monday, May 6th.
May 6th, I believe.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
Woo!
Yeah.
I remember STS-129. That was we've talked about it before. Yeah. It was a NASA tweet up.
Yeah.
It's the first time Gene and I met. First time a bunch of us met, kind of like your experience, Heather, at 135.
Yeah.
And Atlantis, STS-129, it was a flawless countdown. It really spoiled you for thinking that, wow, this is the way it goes. Well, you never know. But let's hope that everything goes well. And there's a lot of work to do between now and then. We'll be talking about it. We may be talking about it when we get close to launch. But we'll have some pictures that I've captured from Boeing's press collection. So we'll see that in the show notes.
Very good. Well, I am another one who hopes that the crewed flight test will definitely be something to write home about, or if nothing else, to talk to our listeners about. So very good. Well, I think that does it for us tonight. I want to thank my cohorts, Mark Ratterman. Thank you, Mark.
Yeah, every now and then you get me wound up, and I don't know when to stop talking.
I love it.
But
I love it.
You can tell there's things that are exciting, and for me, it's the hardware, it's the rockets, it's being able to talk to the people that are part of it. I really have trouble focusing on things like budget and Mars sample return. Oh, gee. I appreciate the interest that the rest of you have.
Billions of dollars.
Billions. Hey, we get a new crew launch, you guys.
That's right.
A new crew. It's a new rocket, a new ship.
And speaking of new crew, I also like to thank our new cohort, Heather Smith.
Woohoo! Yay!
Looking forward to many more shows with you.
Oh, yeah. I'm ready to do this again. This is awesome.
Very good. So until next time, this is Larry Heron for Talking Space. Have a good evening, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.